Hi, everyone. It's Sam and John and Gary with you tonight for this campfire conversation. And tonight we wanted to take another point, another idea out of the book, It's Your Call. Something that's contained within a chapter, but it's not about the whole chapter. And it really was Sam's idea initially as we were emailing about what should we do tonight.
Oh,
it really is around this.
Like it's a good idea.
I think Sam had a good one on this one for a change. So we wanted to talk about the idea is calling played out, lived out in a job description. Because, again, this is, I think most of us, especially as men, this is the way we look at it. A job description is something, or rather a calling is something that we do throughout the day, that we get paid for. It consumes most of our time. It's what's in demand. It's what's expected of us. And I think we think in terms of that. Now, I think there's a desire side of this where we want our life to be that. We want to spend the majority of our time doing the thing that God has given us to do, playing the part and the role in the advancement of the kingdom of God. And I think the desire and the world kind of mixes us all up, and we start looking at jobs as callings. And yes, this isn't a new topic for us to talk about. We've done this quite a bit, but I like the idea of revisiting it. And Sam especially thought it would be good if we revisited this idea, this concept. So Sam, what stirred you? Now, you had many thoughts of a different direction we could go, and this is one of them. But what was kind of behind this thought that you had for tonight's conversation?
Well, I think the thing that triggered it for me was I like your distinctions. I mean, I really do. And I think it would be helpful before we go on, if you don't mind, just giving a quick brief summary I'm sort of repeating myself. Department of Redundancy Department. could you just make the distinction again between calling, roles, and assignments?
Okay. Well, as I define it, a calling, and of course the whole book was kind of dedicated to this, to defining calling. Our calling is this God-created, God-given, God-inspired effect that we most powerfully can bring to this world, and we want to. It's the very thing that we think about, we see, we pick up, we care about. And so it often shows itself up as a very consistent, deep curiosity in our life about something. You know, it might turn out to be always wondering about how does that work, or why does that not work, or why do people do this, or those kind of things. So it often shows itself as a curiosity. It often shows itself as we've talked about this before, more than a need that we're aware of, more than a concern that we have, more than a burden that we feel, but actually to the point of a cause, where it goes beyond what we think someone ought to do something about to the point of we're saying, I've got to do something about this. I have to enter into this. I have to offer. I have to intervene. So it's very much a compelling inner life. And as I talk about it, you know, in the book, that everybody, believer or non-believer, everybody has a calling. They have a God-given effect because they were created by God. And yet that effect, without the redemptive work of Christ and the progressive work of Christ, you know, day after day of walking with him, that effect, that compelling, that curiosity, that cause can become very contaminated, off-track, self-centered, impure. So everybody has that in their life, and everybody also has roles in their life. And roles are, in a sense, the situations we find ourselves in life. So a role would be a husband, and you have the role of a husband if you're married. If you have children, you have the role of a father or a mother. If you work for somebody, you choose to work for somebody, you have the role of an employee. If you have your own job, you're an employer, if you hire people. And so there are roles that we have in our life, and roles and callings are not the same thing. We have an effect. Whether we have any of those roles or not, we have an effect. And we have those roles if we're in that situation. If we have children, we are a father. If we're married, we are a husband. And we have those. And then there are
assignments. You could be a wife. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But we really do have the gender that we're born with. I just want to make that clear as you say that. So that was just for Sam in particular.
So, I'm a little confused.
No, I'm a little confused. He gets so swayed by the, you know, the beliefs of this world. You know, but anyway. And then there are assignments. And I define those are they are those places that God directs us to. Those places that need the effect, the cause that we're drawn to, or the compelling of our life. It needs those. God knows that those people, that situation, that place needs the brilliance, the splendor that God has given us. It needs it. So he assigns us to that. He takes us there. But that assignment also may have much to do with the training that he has to bring to us so that we become more of the person that can bring that effect to the world better. So again, some people will call their role a calling, and it is not. But we are to bring our calling to our roles. So I'll stop with that.
So you asked me why this topic piqued my curiosity again. And I would say the reason is, and I would like to ask both John and Gary this, but I feel like as I was just thinking about this last week is I want to know what is the chief danger? What is the danger we all believers face when we confuse calling roles and assignments? What dangerous territory are we entering in when we can't distinguish between them?
Well, I want to start there because that really ties in with why I like this topic so much. It was probably the most freeing thing I learned going through the book and going through the calling retreat, because I had been caught up in the idea that your calling is more along the lines of becoming a pastor or becoming a missionary, and I kept trying to figure out, well, what am I supposed to be? An accountant, that's not very valuable in the kingdom. Surely there's something more valuable for me to be than an accountant. And I spent years wrestling with, isn't there anything better that I can do? And I investigated seminary. I investigated all kinds of full-time ministry. And I was really, really frustrated. And what has liberated me so much is to discover that my calling is who I am. It's what I bring in any and every situation I find myself in. And my role as an accountant or my assignment there is simply a place for me to bring that glory. And it has changed my whole perspective on going to work.
So would it be fair to say that one of the dangers of confusing them is it can be depressing?
Yeah, no. I mean, you get stuck, and you wonder, what is my value? You try to measure your value or find your value in what your role is or what your assignment is. And too often, in most cases, I really think what someone's assignment or role may be is not something that's all that glamorous. And so if we try to equate that with our calling, then it really taints our picture of who we are, and it taints our picture of what God is like to make us that way. And if we fail to see the glory he has developed in us, that is the reflection of him in us.
So one danger is if we sort of confuse it with a title like pastor, missionary, youth leader, worship leader. Now, those are religious titles. But, you know, it could be teacher or attorney. I mean, if we confuse it with those titles, if we're not measuring up exactly, or if we can't do it, it's depressing. How is it dangerous if you are doing well? I mean, what if you said your calling was to be an attorney and you're making millions of dollars because everybody wants your services? How is it dangerous that way?
Well, you know what? Yeah, that's fascinating, because I think that if we're doing well, you hear all the time that people that they give their life to their job. Mm-hmm. And most people that I think that do that, whatever exactly that means, are people that are doing well, right? The rewards are so great, it's almost become an addiction. They can't not make more money. They can't not have more power, and on it goes, as addictions work. And I think the danger in that is all of a sudden you give your life to that job, that role, that and role, I mean, in the work world, I should say. Yeah. I shouldn't use the word role, but that job description, that title, that's what I was looking for.
Title, yeah.
And you sell yourself out to it because you think that's it. That's life, that's significance, that's what I'm here for. See, I think that's one of the big dangers is I think we will give ourselves to what we believe our life is about and what makes our life meaningful and fulfilling. And I find it very easy to do it with work. You know, there's always been aspects of my work that I've not liked. It, of course, it's the world. That has to
right.
be true.
Of course, yeah.
But I've never hated my jobs ever. And I think if I've ever erred in a direction, it's I've given myself over to my work too much. In fact, I know I have, because I've heard that from my wife, you know, back in the early years. And I know it's true. You know, it's what I thought about. It's what I did. It's where I put my time, my emotion, my affection. So I think that's a real danger of selling out to it because you believe this is where life is found and this is what your life is about and this is what the world needs from you versus what you always talk about, Sam. It really is your heartbeat that if we will abide in Christ, we will produce fruit. So that has to be our attention. I think
and
it's
the danger of having a title that you don't live up to, you know, you say, I'm not a priest, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a whatever, is depression. The danger of succeeding in that title is you could be missing the very thing that God has called you to. I mean, you might be saying, I'm a great attorney, but God might be saying, no, I've given you a heart for the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be skipping the very thing that you're made for. And you know what? We know it. I mean, how many rich people are the ones that are addicted to drugs and addicted to, you know, all kinds of things that are bad for them because even their outward success isn't working for them.
Right. Well, okay, so another danger that you're making me think about is this. If we believe our calling is lived out as a job or a role, we have made ourselves unbelievably vulnerable. Because, and especially nowadays, you know, that can be taken away in a heartbeat. I know people that are, you know, who are really doing well in their job and had a great position and great pay and doing well, and all of a sudden they're told, we're letting that division go now.
Right.
Or we're letting you go. And man, if I think that my life here in this world as a follower of Christ is about a job and that gets taken away, I got to rethink my faith, you know, that's just a job. It's just a place to earn some money. And that's what happens in this world, you know. So I think to make our calling a job is to make ourselves very vulnerable to this world and other people. And then, you know, I mean, if that's the truth, if we think that's the truth, it's a job, I think we will relate to those people over us in very unhealthy ways to assure that we don't lose our calling. I just think it is rampant with danger when we think our calling, and we hold that as very important, our calling as a job.
So either
and,
one of
and
you
along those lines.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, along those lines is not only if you get fired from your job, but what about at 5 or 6 o'clock when it's time to go home? Do you clock out and then you're no longer in your calling? Do you go home to your wife and you just ignore your calling? you know, your neighbors, your family, your friends, or whatever. It's like you said earlier, Gary, you really miss the true weightiness of your life in all the rest of your life. And there's so many avenues for you to bring that weightiness outside of work.
Right.
That's a
now,
great point.
Yeah. And Jim McFarland said, you know, he said, if our calling doesn't bring us into closer proximity to our relationship with God, then we're possibly off course. And then Michael said, yeah, I think you're right, Jim. I don't think calling is something you can fully enter into apart from God. And so, right, I agree with that. I mean, again, I can do a job with or without God. I mean, the majority of the world does that. But
sort of.
Man, what'd you say?
I said sort of.
Sort of. Yeah, it's not very redemptive and helpful. But right, if my calling, my being aware of these desires that God has put in my heart for goodness, if that doesn't pull me to God, then where is it pulling me? You know, and again, this is so much Sam's heartbeat. Where is it pulling you? Because then it's a miss if it's not to God. It means you're getting a source of life and effect and, you know, from somewhere else.
So let me ask a question different than I was going to ask, but how then might calling roles and assignments and titles, I mean, we can use a variety of different words, calling roles, assignments, and titles, how can they conflict or compete with each other?
Calling roles and titles, right?
Or assignments, yep.
Yeah.
How might they be in conflict? How do you see them in conflict? In your book, you talk about how somebody says, my calling is to be a father. And so they ignore their calling. Or they might say, my calling is to be a boss, and they ignore their family. I mean, just describe how it might conflict.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll jump in, John, and then you. And then, Sam, I want you to answer these, too. So, because, yeah, I get what you're doing. I want to ask the question. So I get this. I fell for it for a little bit. Yeah, so first of all, I think it would be, and I've done this, it's very easy to kind of excuse your absence from the home. And that can be literally your physical absence, or it could be your emotional absence from the home, because, you know, your calling is so important and you're playing out your calling. You know, you brought the effect of your life to your work and you see how that's playing out, or to your church or to somewhere. And so you now elevate calling over your roles. And as I said in the book, because I found it in Scripture, you know, God holds them equal, your roles and your calling, and he doesn't put one in opposition to the other, but I think we can easily do that. The other I would throw out that comes to my mind is that I believe that God has given us, as we said, a certain effect that we have a brilliance in that effect. And it usually boils down to our ability to see something that most people can't see, or to pick up something, perceive something that other people aren't seeing or perceiving.
Sure, absolutely.
Or knowing how to fix something that other people just don't easily know how to fix. So, and it's easy to live in that and to be that at home as well. When, if let's just say, what I love to do is to, you know, find clarity in a situation. Well, when I'm home, my kids may not need me to find clarity in their situation. They just need me to love them, just be affectionate, you know, wrestle with them or joke with them or you know, do something else. And if I am always stuck in that one thing that I find easiest for me because it's who I am, that's where I think you become that parent that others, that your kids kind of resent and say, you're pretty much absent to me, but always engage with others because that was your deal, you know? So I think that could be a danger, a conflict between calling and roles.
I've got a friend who is a professional And in his work, he has told me on a number of occasions he is called to be what he does in his work. And I watched his life. He sees that so solidly that he misses opportunities to bring who he really is into that situation, particularly when he has opportunity to bring who he is into someone else's life. And because he feels so called to his profession, he spends most of his time just simply grinding out the duties of his job, and he's just missing it. It's a conflict between his role and his calling, because he's so devoted to his role that he's missing the opportunity to bring the weightiness of his life into those people around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam, what do you think?
So I didn't think you were going to ask me this, so I wasn't prepared. But
I thought I was going to forget. Well, I didn't.
I would argue that calling never conflicts with roles or assignments. I think roles and assignments conflict. So, you know, my role as a boss might conflict with my role as a father or as a husband. You know, I might work harder at work than I do with my wife, that I spend time with my wife. Or my assignment. You know, you could say my assignment at work is conflicting with my role as a husband. I think that if I'm doing my calling right, I'm going to always bring my calling into my roles and my assignments. Meaning, part of the reason God brought me to marry Carla is to bring something. Now, I have to be fair and let her bring stuff to me too. In other words, I have to let her walk into her calling because God has given her stuff to bring me. But I think that what we see often is, you know, we'll see the missionary who says, I'm supposed to be a missionary, and they ship their kids off to boarding school because they this is actually one of the dangers, now that I think about it, of confusing calling roles and assignments. You know, I don't know what their calling is. Their assignment might be to be a missionary, but that assignment might be conflicting with their role as a parent. And I'm not trying to badger or bludgeon anyone who's a missionary who sent their kids to boarding school. I know a lot of kids that worked out really well, so I don't mean to say that, but I'm just saying I think one of the dangers of confusing calling roles and assignments is we can set up a false conflict that doesn't have to be there. But the truth is, you know, I think the part of my calling, a small part of my calling, is I like to make people take risks. I like to help people overcome fear and take risks. Well, I did that in my job. Those are assignments. I did that as a father. My kids are, unfortunately, they're all bigger risk takers than I wish they would be. But, you know, I did that as my role as a father. I don't think it conflicted. You know, it only conflicted when I might have been pushing my calling ahead of Carla's calling, where Carla might be bringing something else to them, like wisdom. but I do think that there's a way that we can bring our calling into our role. In fact, we should be bringing our calling into our roles and assignments. You know, again, with wisdom,
right,
where we're letting other people walk in their calling and we can receive from their calling. I think it's roles and assignments that mainly conflict. You know,
yeah.
I'm a boss, so I'm not going to spend time at home with the kids. Or I'm just a father, I'm going to do a half-assed job at work. You know,
right.
But in reality, shouldn't, you know, if Gary, if part of your calling is clarity, and I really believe it is, you're not going to hurt your kids by just helping them clarify their thoughts about what they should study in school and what they're thinking about their relationship with their friends. You know, if you do it graciously and you're not pushing yourself on them. I think
right.
We're supposed to bring our calling into our roles and assignments.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm just saying, if that's the only side of me that I bring,
sure.
You know how guys are often accused of, you know, you only live out of your strengths. You won't take any chances because you only do what you know to do well, but we never see the other sides of you because you won't venture out into, you know,
right,
goofing around or asking a question that you don't know how to answer if it comes back, or, you know, whatever those things are. So I agree with you on that. And I think, you know, one of the things that's helpful about keeping in your mind, keeping roles and calling as two separate categories, though hopefully they overlap a great deal, hopefully.
I sure hope they do. And
yeah.
Assignments.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, all three of them. But the thing is, as I said in the book, as I reread the chapter, I reread that section going,
I did
forgot about that. But it's this idea that if something comes along, let's say a job, and it really requires who we believe we are, and we think, gosh, that would be so great to do. That's what I love to do. We need to ask the question, but is that going to take away from my ability to fulfill my roles? And it may be as a husband, as a father, maybe because it is traveling, or maybe that's going to require me to put my kids in a boarding school, like, you know, being a missionary in another country. Well, you know, my point was then stop and take pause and say, God, this concerns me. I don't know that I can be a good father if my kids are gone from me 3 months at a time. Do you really want me to do this? Or whatever that is, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I just think we have to hold them separately in one sense, that we can look at both of them very clearly with the assignment that appears to be in front of us, the opportunity, and say, how will that affect both my living out, the calling of my life, my effect, and my roles? And if there is conflict, I mean, I think you're right. I think God could call us in a situation and say, you know what? I'll take care of your kids, but they're going to be in boarding school 3 months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Or he may be saying, no, your children will not do well. I'm not asking you to do that right now. And I remember, you know, meeting missionary kids in the Rift Valley in Africa years ago, and where we were, took a gymnastics team. We were, you know, performing and sharing and that kind of stuff. And I heard from some of the kids, they were just pissed. They were mad.
Yeah.
They were felt abandoned by their parents, that they weren't important, but the whatever village your parents were in was more important. So, yeah, I think that stopping to say, God, really? Because I don't think this side's going to go so well. And one more thing, I think God will pull us into assignments where it doesn't require, you know, all of our strengths, if you will, but God saying, oh, no, I've got things to teach you there. I've got some training for you. Yeah.
So that's exactly where I was wanting to go. And my question is, how valuable is it to ask God, why have you given me this assignment? For example, Michael Thompson was talking about where he's been put into assignments that he felt were more training him. He ends his comment, I believe God has placed me under leadership that wasn't good to reveal how I'm not to lead. So the point being, let's say God is giving us assignments. Sometimes our assignments, I think, are because God says, I need Gary's clarity right here. I've put Gary here because that environment needs Gary's clarity. I think God sometimes puts us into assignments because God says, I need to train Michael Thompson how to be a leader. And one of the best ways to train him how to be a leader is to show him what a bad leader is.
Right.
So how valuable do you think it is when we're in assignments that are feeling awkward and nasty and whatever, how valuable is it to say, why has God put me into this assignment or this role?
Right. I mean, that's where, you know, in the genesis of your book of hearing God in conversation of, you know, we've got to hear him in Scripture, but we've also asked to hear him as he speaks to us personally, because we're not going to find an answer to that in Scripture. But, you know, as you know, should I do this? Is this the right assignment? But I think, right, we have to hear God say, no, I really do have this for you right now. Because, yeah, I had one of those assignments too where I thought, why am I here? Am I getting punished by God? Or did I make a fleshly decision? And I can look back and say, no, it was definitely God.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I learned, it was so much training. And part of it was being under leadership, bad leadership, that I needed to feel what bad leadership felt like so I could say, I never want to do that to a person because that feels awful to treat a person, to relate a person like that. So absolutely, I think training is a big part of it.
Well, you look at the life of Joseph, you know, every step in his life was just one more training session, whether it was in jail or in Potiphar's house or back to jail or, you know, whatever he was doing, he was always being trained in his leadership, even though the situation may have been just absolutely horrible.
Right. Right. Well, okay, so let me just say, you know, I just said how you know, Sam's heartbeat is, you know, we need to focus in on abiding in Christ and then fruit will come. You know, one of Michael's heartbeats is training. That's the fun thing about Michael. When you hear him speak, when you read his writing, you know, it always gets back to God training us. It always gets there. He can talk about the father heart of God and, you know, being finding yourself as a son to your father, to God. But it always gets back down to training. And that's just such his heart and what he helps us with. It's just fun seeing people and you really find out what is their compelling, what's the greatest curiosity. I know we're a little off subject here for a minute, but...
No, but that's a great example. I mean, Michael is the head of an organization. He's, you know, the president or the founder of his charity.
Oh, International Corporation.
His International Corporation. But you would say that part of his calling is the love of training, the nurturing of training, the support of training, the always pointing people to training. This is part of his heart. Forget his title for a minute. It's part of who he is what you're saying.
Yep.
And how do you put a title on that?
Right.
And I'll bet he does it with his family. I'll bet he does it with his friends. He did it with us just tonight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been around, you know, he and his wife and his girls, and, you know, he's training them all the time. I just have this little smile on my face, maybe a snicker, because I'm watching him going, yeah, he's doing it with his family like he does with the guys. He does it pretty well. So I don't so much like when he does it with me, but just
and my wife must have that gift. She's always training me.
Yeah, house training, potty. Anyway, okay, yes. Anyway,
oh my goodness.
I have a question. If you're him,
go ahead.
Him hauling around. I'm thinking about the three of us and what you guys bring. In fact, Gary even said in his book what he brings, the weightiness that he brings in a situation. I'm just thinking what are some of the things that you bring and what are some examples of where you have brought that, maybe not in a work situation or a ministry situation, but just in a day-to-day, ordinary life situation. It was still you bringing your weightiness.
Go ahead, Sam. I'm deferring to you.
Well, I would say that one of the things, I mean, I mentioned this before, I like to help people take risks. And, you know, risk may be the wrong word. I don't know that I've refined it, but I love it when people do something that they've been afraid of for a long time. You know, I think I've told John this. Maybe it was Gary that I told this. But whenever I had a new employee, I would look for an opportunity for them to stand up to me. So, you know, if I had an employee that was a customer service rep, you know, I would wait till they'd been there 6 months or 9 months, and then they would bring to me some, you know, naughty customer. So our customers were expensive. You know, they weren't expensive. We were expensive, but they paid us a lot of money. You know, they might pay us a couple $100,000 a year, so we wanted to keep them. And when they had a problem, it was really serious. So we might have had a new customer service rep that comes to me, and they say, we've got this problem. What should we do? And after I had gotten to know them a little bit, I would propose something stupid. I mean, I would just deliberately propose something stupid. Now, Gary, you probably think it was accidental that I proposed something stupid.
You use this technique all the time.
And I was waiting for the new employee to say, I don't know that that'll work. And I'd say, exactly. You got to stand up to me because you know the situation better than I do. I liked to foster a type of risk-taking, a type of boldness. And I did that with my employees. I did that with my kids. I think with Gary and John, I like it when you guys take risks about something. I mean, you know, Gary and I are often saying, well, let's just try it. Let's experiment. Let's try something. To me, I feel like that's part of who I am, and I want to get people just to try stuff because I think that it will make them more free. not to fear failure, but just to say, hey, we're going to try this, and if it doesn't work, it's okay. Does that answer your question, John, or did I completely
miss
the question?
Yeah, that's a real good example. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
And I did it everywhere. I did it in my jobs. I did it with my family. I do it with friends. You know, I remember Pete Emhoff. Some of you guys know Pete Emhoff. Pete was working for Young Life for years. You know, I think he worked for them for 15 or 20 years. And he really wanted to start a men's ministry. And he was wrestling over it and sweating over it. And one day he and I were at lunch, and I just said, well, Pete, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, and it just came out of my mouth, and he sat there and he thought, he says, well, the worst thing that could happen is I fail and I go back to Young Life. He says, I can do that, you know. And literally a month later, he quit his job and started his men's ministry, which has just been going great for 10 years now. I like to give people an ability to take a risk. So I'm done.
Well, the other thing, Stan, that you do and that I've observed is, you know, you really, this comes out in your blogs. It's in the title of Beliefs of the Heart. You really like to, and you're really good at helping a person understand all that's involved with their current belief, which is reflected in their action or inaction at that moment. So, like, even asking Pete, this is what you want to do. What's the worst that can happen if you do it? I mean, it's kind of getting down into, let's get down to the bottom of the well and see why you can't make a plan here. What are all these beliefs that are down in here? Well, you know, and you're just good at doing that. I mean, that's what you do. And that's what can feel risky. You'll ask a question which feels like, gosh, you sure you want to ask that, or you know, do you think they'll be offended? Because it almost like you're almost sounds like you're questioning them. But it feels like what you're trying to do is get them to get down to the bottom of the well and sort through what's down in here right now. It's that I call my belief about what I should do. So
that's a really interesting observation. I've never thought about that the way. But in a certain sense, you're saying my desire to help people take risks is really helping them examine what are their deepest beliefs. You know, they might believe if I do this, my life is a total failure.
Right.
But I'm saying, no, absolutely not. What's the worst that could happen? I appreciate that, Gary. I had never thought of it that way.
Yeah. You know, John, to answer that, so let me give you and you know, it's hard because it's part of my work, too, but because I chose for it to be. But so I've spent the last several days, a little more than that, because I was back in the last week, finally going and editing and now producing these calling interviews that I've done. And so I've worked with one person so far, the first interview I did, which was Barry Simpson, you know. And what I've had to do, because you've asked this question, I'm realizing this now, and I'm loving it. I'm just realizing my heart doesn't feel free to start writing yet, so I thought, well, let me do the other thing I love, and that's kind of videography, you know. So I had to go through probably 2 hours of interviews, of interviewing a material, and I honed it down into 4 3-minute sections.
Wow.
And what I did was, with that question you asked, what I've done is I've said, okay, what are the most significant parts of his story, of what he's telling me? What are the points you could do something with that define, in a good way, who he is and what God's been up to in his hand in his life? And it's I can't wait to get it to you guys. I think these are 4 phenomenal things, and they just stir you to go, oh, man, I remember this in my life. And but as you ask that question, I realize that's what I really enjoy doing is in a setting. It's just listening for a while. And Bam will say, okay, bingo, right there. That was a defining moment. That means something with their present and future life. And to look for those things, kind of just decipher them out and decipher them. I really enjoy that. So I find myself doing it these videos. As I'm now an elder at this church, I think that's what I do best with these guys, is to be able to hear a discussion and think, okay, but what is the most important thing that's come up in this discussion that lends itself to the truth of the decision has to be made or the situation? So, anyway.
And, you know, as you were saying that about Barry, I had written down the three words you used to describe what you bring, and they were clarity, focus, and design. And that's exactly what you just described, what you did with those videos with Barry.
Yeah, thank you. That's helpful.
Well, and I was going to say that it's exactly what you do when you were discussing working with the elders at church. You bring a clarity, a focus, and what is God's design here? So it's very interesting that you can't help but do it. Just like Michael Thompson can't help but train or focus on training or value training.
Yeah.
You bring clarity, focus, and design. That's good.
Yeah. Huh. Thank you. So, John, how about you? You're going to have to answer this question. This is a great question to end our time on.
And
so
I'll
how would you
answer
that?
I
know you're good.
One of the key things that's true of my calling is that I absolutely love to be able to speak words to someone that gives them the next step in their journey, to look at where they are, look at where they've been, and just to be able to see, now here is where you need to take your next step, or maybe ask questions that lead them to come to that conclusion. And so that happens quite often, or it can happen a lot at work, talking with clients and that sort of thing. But as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, I did that an hour ago with my next-door neighbor. I was out doing some yard work, and he came home from work, and we chatted a little bit. And in the midst of the conversation, we were talking about kids, and I just said, I can't remember what I said, but it had to do with, you know, his daughter's now 1 year old, and I just said, this is something you really ought to do, this next step. And I was already, my mind was just thinking of all kinds of things I wanted to just, you know, lay on him, and I kind of had to hold back. I didn't want to give him, here's the 12 next steps for you to take. But, you know, that's just the way my heartbeat is I'm always looking for, where are you right now, and what can I say? What do I see as God's activity in your life? What journey you're on, and what can I say that will move you in that next step?
And that makes so much sense to me as well, because I know. Okay, first of all, you told a story about years and years ago. Someone said to you, "I think you really are a shepherd," you know. And it was about teaching, and you said, and there was that resonance in your heart that said, oh, I like that. I think that's true. I want that to be true. I want to be, you know, and that's very much a shepherding thing, the next step, you know, and that's what most of us just want is, I don't know what the next step is. Can you help me? I think that's very much who you are. And you've always said your favorite setting, you know, you can do many settings, but your favorite setting is one-on-one.
Yeah,
and that's really where you listen for a next step for somebody. It's not in a group. It's not in a large room. It's really just one-on-one. And then one other reflection, and I'll stop, and that is this. Ever since you told me, and this was years ago, that, you know, one of the, I guess, terms, I don't think it's a title, maybe so, or maybe it's a kind of an accreditation, if you will, not a formal one, but is this idea of the CPA as a trusted advisor. And I remember when I heard that, I thought, that's what John is. He's a trusted advisor. And take it completely out of being a CPA for a minute and that business, though I think you play that out very well there. I think you are that trusted advisor. I think it's a transcendent term for you. And people feel that. And anyway, that makes a lot of sense to me from my years of knowing you as a friend.
Well, what's so funny about you bringing that particular incident up is that I was thinking about that very same incident when you were talking about how you bring focus, because in that conversation you said stop. You just said trusted advisor, and when you said that, it had incredible weight to it, and I had no idea until you said that. And so it was just a you know, you were living out your calling in that conversation.
You know, just one observation I have, John, on what you said is one of the things that I've always appreciated about working with you is it doesn't seem to me that you care about the limelight. And I think that really when we're walking in our calling, we shouldn't care about the limelight. We care about what we're doing. Helping somebody with the next step is sort of what Paul was saying. You know, he says, you know, so-and-so planted, so-and-so watered, so-and-so plowed. I don't care. And when you're helping with the next step, you're saying in the end there's a final fruit. I just did this part. I helped them with the next step. And I like the humility of that. I really do. I think there's a beauty in the humility of that, because you're saying, I don't care if I'm getting all the glory. I want to help someone with the next step. They're going to be helped. They're going to be cared for. You know, maybe I plowed and somebody else planted and somebody else watered. I don't care. I just want to help them with the next step. I think there's a beauty in the way you said that. And I wish we all had that. I just want to help someone with the next step.
I agree.
We don't need the personal glory and acclaim. And I think that you live that out. I really think you live that out.
Yeah.
So
it's true. So everyone, we're at quarter till right now, and what I want to say is I don't want you to feel like John and Sam and I just get on and we just chat and we expect that you guys are just going to listen and kind of enjoy us talking to each other and not to you. I'm looking at this phenomenal conversation that you guys are having on the chat line, and I have to be careful if I read it too much and enjoy it, then I miss what Sam and John are saying. You guys have this great dialogue going on. It's just not audible. And I'm so glad you're doing that. But what I do want to say is that what John and Sam and I did just now in the last 5 minutes, this wasn't scripted at all or planned. But what we did was simply, you know, spoken out of friendship and observation with each other. And this is what we need to be doing for each other. I mean, everyone on here, this is what we can do for each other. You know, Sam and John and I make it a point to talk to each other. Even though we haven't done that for 3 months. That was a little heretical. But typically we talk more often. And so I just want to encourage you guys, we need to do this with each other. And, you know, Sam and John and I don't have an exclusive club here. We're all friends. We just, you know, if I talk to one of these guys, it's typically because one of those guys have reached out to me and said, hey, let's get on the phone. And we do, and it's just that simple. But if none of us do that, it never happens. So I want to encourage this kind of thing amongst all of us. And if we find ourselves in a place going, gosh, I just feel really foggy right now in my life about my calling, my roles, and my assignment, then get on the phone with somebody. I mean, everyone on here, you look at this dialogue, and Sam and John will agree with me, you look at this dialogue, and there is a lot of wisdom and perspective and understanding amongst this group that's on the phone right now on the chat line. So it could be us. It could be any one of these guys. So just reach out and do it, because that's what we're here for each other.
And if you don't know who to reach out to, get on Basecamp and just post something. I need to talk to somebody. I need some help.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think most of us check in fairly frequently. We may not stay on Basecamp all day long, though Sam and John and I do, but we're not always watching it. But that's a great way to do it, Sam, is to put it up there and just let someone respond, because someone will.
Someone will, you know. Absolutely.
Right, so. All right, this has been a great conversation. And let me encourage you guys to be thinking, get it on your calendar now, the Basecamp gathering next September. I think it's the 14th through the 17th. It's that middle weekend in September at Bear Trap Branch. So, guys, get it on your calendar so that you don't find yourself in the middle or end of summer going, oh, I want to go, but it's too late now. So get it on your calendar, RSVP if you want to on the Basecamp events page, and I will put up fairly soon, within a couple of weeks, the ability, if you want to put a deposit down and just to kind of cement your decision with your family by putting money down on it. So anyway.
It's the greatest weekend of the year.
Absolutely.
Yep. It is the greatest weekend of the year.
It is. It's my favorite event as well. I just saw Jerry Smook, who, you know, is an airline pilot for American, used to live in Chicago, now lives in Denver, and is moving to Castle Rock now. And he just came down here, and we had an hour together talking, and we just talked about that's the favorite event of the whole year, that one.
Mm-hmm.
I love the other ones, but I love that one. So,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. John, Sam, thank you. And everyone's joined us. Thank you. And we will see you next week. So good night.
Good night. Good night.